The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Sacred Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you are not convinced that anything is gained when Christians dialogue with skeptics, especially if those skeptics call themselves agnostics. Well, my friend, this was suggested by one of our listeners after listening to a radio debate that was broadcast 2 weeks ago. We will look at his comments in just a few minutes. Welcome to our program. It's good to be back after a long Christmas break. We've been airing repeats the past few weeks. In fact, that very debate mentioned was a rebroadcast of a program from October of 2013. My listener, Al, heard the repeat broadcast, and I'm glad people are listening to the repeats, but I'm also happy to be back with you for a brand new program. In fact, today marks the beginning of the 10th season of the Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ. It's hard to believe it's been that long. And a lot has been happening lately in the news. Of course, that whole Duck Dynasty thing hit the fan during Christmas break, and your old pal Bob wasn't around to offer a commentary. Not that my commentary will surprise anyone. I mean, who are we kidding? But I think I'll be predictable and go for it anyway. Let's review. Duck Dynasty, of course, is a popular reality show on the A&E network. I should begin by saying that I can't stand reality shows. Even though this is a family of Christians, and even though I certainly stand by their right to say or believe whatever they want, I still don't care for the program, partly for the reason I just mentioned. It's a reality show, and partly because duck hunting is about as interesting to me as studying a slow-moving slug. Phil Robertson, the patriarch of the family, was interviewed by GQ magazine, and in that interview, he did say some things about homosexuals that people viewed as offensive. Now, why he agreed to an interview with GQ magazine, I'm sure I don't know, but here's the thing. Robertson didn't bring the subject up. GQ magazine brought it up. Their question was, what do you consider a sin? Now, had he said gossip, this would not have hit the news. It's like what happened with Carrie Prejean in the Miss USA pageant of 2009, although in her case, she was asked directly about homosexuality, not sin in general. She was asked by openly gay judge Perez Hilton for her views about same-sex marriage and then pillaged when she dared to actually answer the question, according to her beliefs. And these were her exact words. We live in a land where you can choose same-sex marriage or opposite. And you know what? I think in my country, in my family, I think that I believe that a marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offense to anybody out there, but that's how I was raised. Now, Hilton, Paris Hilton, responded to that evening by going on the internet and called Carrie Prejean a dumb, and it's the B word. I won't even repeat it over the radio, but I think you know which word I'm talking about, a dumb B. Although he later apologized, it was fairly clear who the tolerant one was that evening. So yes, Robertson, when he was interviewed by GQ, he could have used some tact. He could have used some seasoned speech. But here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, Carrie Prejean was very tactful and seasoned and loving in her response. It made no difference. Didn't make a hill of beans a difference, which means that had Robertson answered in a nicer way, it wouldn't have made any difference with him either. This is because a litmus test for those who are frustrated that evangelical Christians represent a corner of the world that has not as of yet succumbed to political correctness is being offered all over the place. And so my friends in the media, if you don't want to hear what people may honestly believe about homosexuality, maybe you should stop asking about it. But he was asked. And by the way, a good deal of that offensive quote of his is actually found in the Bible. Here's the first thing he said. He said, start with homosexual behavior and just morph out from there. Bestiality, sleeping around with this woman and that woman and that woman and those men. He wasn't trying to say that those who are homosexuals commit bestiality any more than he would have been saying that homosexualities are those who sleep around with other women. He listed sleeping around with other women too. But anyway, those were his own words. Then what followed was actually a fairly close quotation from 1 Corinthians chapter 6. He was paraphrasing, but notice how close it is. He said, don't be deceived. Neither the adulterers, the idolaters, the male prostitutes, the homosexual offenders, the greedy, the drunkards, the slanderers, the swindlers, they won't inherit the kingdom of God. Don't deceive yourself. It's not right. Okay, those were his words. Now, here are the actual words from 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 and 10, written by the Apostle Paul. Do you not know that the wicked will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor male prostitutes, nor homosexual offenders, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor slanderers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. All right, look, people try to claim that this verse isn't really saying anything about homosexuality. Look, folks, if you disagree with the Bible, that's your choice. You can believe whatever you want. But don't pretend the Bible isn't saying what it's saying simply because you don't like what it says. You have to do verbal gymnastics and make those words stand on their heads to change the meaning. On the other hand, Paul Joseph Watson of Infowars.com seems to understand that these words really are in the Bible. That's why he suggests that maybe the Bible itself should be banned. I'm reading from a recent column of Paul Joseph Watson. He says, if we are to accept that Robertson's rhetoric represents hate speech, then the Bible should immediately be banned because it openly incites violence against gays. Robertson expresses his disagreement with the homosexual lifestyle and characterizes it as a sin. The Bible characterizes homosexuality not only as a sin, but as an abomination punishable by death. According to the Supreme Court, hate speech is permissible under the First Amendment unless it is likely to lead to imminent hate violence. Since the Bible openly and aggressively advocates that homosexuals be put to death, it can easily be argued that such rhetoric is likely to lead to imminent hate-driven violence. Okay, now look, I did a couple of months ago, I did a whole show about capital punishment in the Old Testament, and capital crimes could be dealt with in an alternative way. There was monetary compensation, but today's not the day to get into that. Today, I just want you to understand the chill of somebody saying we should actually outlaw the Bible. In any event, A&E, after initially suspending Robertson, caved to public pressure, and Robertson is back on the show. However, if you think this is over simply because A&E gave in, think again. Many have pointed out that this isn't a First Amendment issue. They'll say the First Amendment, after all, is only concerned about the kind of speech government allows, not some television network, which in the free market is allowed to broadcast or cancel any program they wish. That's true. That's absolutely true. This is not a First Amendment issue, but it is a free speech issue, and it's very related because many who want to see Duck Dynasty canceled would also ban the legal freedom to speak critically of homosexuality if given the chance. I just quoted such a person, Paul Joseph Watson. Remember, for many years, it has been part of the militant gay agenda to not only secure the right to marry, but to forbid anyone from speaking out against their lifestyle. In 1987, gay rights spokesman Jeff Levy spoke quite bluntly to the National Press Club in Washington. Here were his words. We are no longer seeking just a right to privacy and a protection from wrong. We also have a right, as heterosexual Americans already have, to see government and society affirm our lives. Well, yeah, it's nice to feel affirmed. Unfortunately, to insist on affirmation from everybody is to infringe on somebody else's right to disagree. By the way, how many gay activists affirm the viewpoints of evangelical Christians? Now, look, most evangelical Christians do not and should not insist on such a right. Instead, they merely seek to share the gospel of Jesus. The message of the gospel is forgiveness of sin, but sometimes before one can understand forgiveness, the sin itself must first be acknowledged. There are many sins listed in the Bible, and homosexuality is not singled out. It is today's liberal journalists and other thought police who are singling it out. But Christians are still entitled to the religious beliefs, which is why the First Amendment not only protects speech, but religion as well. Granted, the response to the Duck Dynasty controversy suggests that most people will not stand for a suppression of the First Amendment, but ultimately, none of that will matter if a few judges decide that they know better than the rest of us what the First Amendment truly means. Anyone who feels this fear is unwarranted should examine recent news. The people of California voted to define marriage as a union between a man and a woman and even put such a law in their Constitution. The courts overturned the law. And just recently, the New Mexico Supreme Court decided that Christian photographers must be willing to service gay weddings or pay a penalty, and they claimed that this was, quote unquote, the price of citizenship. Meanwhile, there are plenty of Paul Joseph Watsons who will call for the banning of the Bible, keeping the issue on the forefront of public debate and an eventual trajectory toward our courts. That's why this issue, stirred up by Duck Dynasty, will be coming up again. Our society would do well to argue about homosexuality less and instead deal with the erosion of free speech, because I would think that would concern anybody, regardless of their view of homosexuality. An erosion of free speech fueled by self-righteous pundits who take it upon themselves to equate disagreement with hate. They do not need to persuade the entire country. They only need to persuade one or two judges. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
This is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. If you'd like to weigh in on any of these things, our theme is always Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Of course, you can reach us over the phone and also through the internet, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. This is from one of our listeners, Al. He's written us before and he's called the show before. He's talking about the debate, which again, was actually aired live in October, but it was repeated just a couple of weeks ago. And he seems to think I didn't need to be quite as nice to my agnostic guest, Wesley, as I was. He says, your conclusion that you enjoyed immensely the banter with your contestant about agnosticism on the air is confusing. What was new about it? And I'm going to respond to Al's letter. He wrote a pretty long one. I'm going to respond a piece at a time. So what was new about it? Well, nothing was new about it. Al, atheists and agnostics have been making the same points and raising the same objections for centuries. It is still healthy to dialogue with them and challenge their positions. And what's wrong with telling somebody that you enjoyed talking with them despite the disagreement? We could use more friendly conversations between people who disagree. Al continues, it was the same canker sore exchange of people talking past each other while thinking words have only the meaning they assign. Well, Al, I agree that that happens a lot. I don't agree that it happened in my case. I strongly disagree. We took pains. We spent a lot of the time in the show, in fact, to clarify our terms and define them so that each opponent could know just exactly what the other meant when he used a word like proof or evidence or faith. Al continues, God means different things to different people, and you know it. And he says that in capital letters very emphatically. God means different things to different people, and you know it. Well, that may be, Al, but there is only one God. He does not change simply because somebody conceives of him differently. Al continues, moreover, proving God doesn't mean a thing if all you've proved is a detached, live-and-let-live watchmaker. Well, that would describe the deist view of God. That is a view that God is attached. Well, Al, it depends on what part of the conversation you're on. First, we establish the existence of some kind of God. Then we talk about who he is. The true God, the God of the Bible, is not a detached watchmaker, but rather he's our creator who will hold us accountable for the way we've lived. I believe Al accepts that too. Al talks as though he's a Christian. And Al, I have found such conversations with both atheists and agnostics very productive. I've been having them for many years. I've seen many atheists and agnostics give their lives to Jesus Christ. I myself was both an atheist and then a few years later an agnostic a few years before becoming a Christian. And I was very grateful to the person who took the time to talk to me. Now, in a formal debate in front of an audience, which I've done many times, or on the radio, which I've done many times, my opponent is unlikely to concede a point, even if he feels that the point is being made well. But even then, many other agnostics or atheists are listening, and they listen more objectively because their egos are not involved in the conversation. Al continues, two, agnosticism is an infantile cop-out. And I say that as a person who's debated Dave Horowitz on agnosticism. Wow, Al, could you get me David Horowitz's contact information? Because I'd love to debate him on agnosticism. And of course, I have a great respect for David Horowitz and where he is politically, but it would be interesting to debate him on the subject. But I digress. He says, and I say that as a person who's debated David Horowitz on agnosticism. They fail to realize that belief in God is a religious concept about salvation for believers. An agnostic is a de facto non-believer. So what the hell has he gained by standing in the middle? He's kicked the can down the road on the most crucial issue of life. The middle is frequently a burial place for dead animals. It's about the phoniness of calling oneself an agnostic, which simply delays facing the ultimate issue. God is a religious concept, not a metaphysical one. The real issue is whether there's any ultimate difference between agnostic or atheist, since they are, at bottom line, non-believers who are outside of salvation. I say this with actual amazement that agnostics can actually defend saying, I'm not going to make a decision on the ultimate issue of life. Well, I'm sorry, fellow, this is about your salvation, not about a geometric exercise that one can take or leave. St. Peter isn't going to meet you at the pearly gates and say, you know, George, you're really welcome here because you realize God made a lousy case for his existence, so you couldn't be expected to make a decision because, after all, we can't know how God will judge each individual in the afterlife. My retort is that if you're willing to go to judgment totally blind and unprepared for consequences, then you are worthless a priori and soundly defeated. If there were $5 at stake, I would prepare myself with criteria to win or lose before I enter the moment of decision. By the very act of not preparing yourself with the criteria, you seal your doom. You just roll the dice on your salvation, but if you go to the racetrack to bet, you steal yourself a priori with the necessary info to make an intelligent bet. Humbug. You're denying that you're here to make a decision. Okay, that's quite a lot from Al. Al, I believe one can begin by sincerely doubting if there is a God or sincerely doubting anything, but I also agree with you to a point. It's true that if one holds on to an agnostic position in the face of facts that come his way, well, then his position certainly does become disingenuous. When my opponent over the air, Wesley, claimed that he could not know anything at all about anything, that was dishonest. And I called him on that when I told him that when Christians claim to have evidence, he uses his senses to evaluate the claim. Thus, he is admitting that through the senses, we can know things. And it was interesting that during the first half of the debate, Wesley said we can never trust our senses. But later on, when I asked him what it would take for him to be convinced of God's existence, he said he would need to see, of course, that's a sense, seeing something. He would need to see somebody healed. Of course, to examine such a healing, Wesley would have had to use his senses to examine the data. Thanks for writing in, Al. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I am joined during the second half of this program with a familiar voice. Mike Friedenberg is one of our frequent and rotating co-hosts. How are you, Mike? Did you have a nice holiday?
Yes, thank you very much, Bob. Actually, I had a very nice Christmas even.
Oh, that's right. Yes. We made quite an issue on some of our shows that the word holiday means holy day, so we might as well admit which holy day we're talking about. Mike, you don't get the impression when you're around Mike that he's particularly politically correct. So he and I get along just fine. I know there's a few news issues on your radar, Mike. There's a lot going on. I would like to get your take on the whole Duck Dynasty thing before we go on with some of the stories that you brought with you.
I mean, other than reading the actual statement, and I have to admit, I've not been, watching the show. I do have some friends that have watched and they really like it and find it to be interesting, better than your average reality show, I could say that. However, the one thing that I did find encouraging is that it's been a long time since somebody has made a comment on that particular subject, gay and homosexuality, that I haven't seen them end up having to come back and beg for forgiveness and prostrate themselves and completely back down.
And we probably wouldn't expect a backwoodsman type to speak with the eloquence of a college professor anyway. I think we would both agree that statement could have been better.
Sure.
But yeah, what he said was true. It is in the Bible.
And no, it could have been said better, but it was said by somebody that was like himself. And if you also follow up on it, he actually gave a sermon in the church where he actually very, very compassionately said, this is not about gay people. This is about sin. And he broadened the subject and he made a very reasonable case.
Right, exactly.
But as you pointed out, the reasonable case doesn't really matter. No matter, unless you wholesale lock, stock, and barrel, agree and affirm, you're going to be attacked.
That's exactly right. And like I said, Carrie Prejean, when we look at her statement, it was very seasoned and tactful, and she went out of her way to say, I mean no offense, and it didn't really matter. So no matter how he said it, he was going to get nailed for it. But and it is interesting. I talked to so many people, even self-professed Christians, say, oh, the Bible doesn't really say anything against homosexuality. And much as I'm bothered by that guy who claims he wants to outlaw the Bible, you have to admit the guy's at least being consistent. He's at least recognized that, hey, if you have a problem with him, then you have a problem with the Bible. And that much is true. That much is true. It is a biblical issue.
Yeah. And the thing is that if it's I don't know if it's a sad truth, but it does seem to be a truth. Unless you have people that are willing to say things in an impolitic manner, on subject matter, for example, Ann Coulter, whom I like a lot, but sometimes she'll say things fairly
She speaks in a very blunt way.
A very blunt and harsh fashion. But by her doing that, you're able then to come behind her and speak in a more reasonable tone, but you can now do it. And so I think in this particular topic, if more people were willing to speak up and, you know, and actually be willing to take, you know, the consequences, and, you know, he was threatened with being taken off the air, and he said, okay, fine, take me off the air. And if people had that more of that attitude, we might be able to get a more frank and open discussion rather than everybody being afraid to talk about the issue.
Well, and it does show where our public is at, because the public really rallied behind him for the most part. Even some people that personally believe in homosexuality, they came out and they said, look, we've got to stand behind free speech. But what concerns me, as I said, is I don't think this is ultimately going to be decided by a democratic society. I think it's going to be decided by a couple of judges. And I think we need, and I know I'm not the only one calling for this, I think we need to have a constitutional convention, which, I mean, we shouldn't need to because our constitution is already clear. But since people don't seem to be reading it, I think we need a convention which reclarifies how much power judges are or are not supposed to have. I don't believe that the power they've been taking was envisioned by our forefathers.
That's a good idea.
You don't think it's going to happen, though?
I don't think it's going to happen. And there is the flip side to that, where if you were to open up the Constitution there, you could find yourself completely out of control of it.
We could have a bunch of people say, yeah, we've outgrown Christianity. Let's take freedom of religion out of the Constitution.
Well, or they could just put something in there that marriage now is now defined as being anything and everything.
Yeah, I suppose it would be better if people just read the Constitution we actually have. Of course, we do have the process of being able to amend it at any time, but I agree this is probably not going to happen. But I don't see much hope for our country if something like that doesn't happen. We have got to, one way or the other, re-clarify what judges are or are not allowed to do. It's insane that we have 9 people with lifetime appointments who can overturn 2 other branches of government. That was never the intention of our forefathers.
It was not intended. There is apparently some mechanisms that are supposedly could be put in place, but we've never seen them put in place to try to do anything about it. And I don't expect we will.
And the first time they did it, during Marbury versus Madison, Jefferson expressed great concern, and the court had actually ruled with him. But he was still concerned that they felt they had the right to rule on it at all, which shows some real consistency and integrity on the part of Jefferson, who probably turns in his grave knowing that people like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are now running our country.
Probably. I think most people from that era would be a little bit shocked.
Okay, Mike. Well, I wanted to get your 2 cents. Let's move on to some of the news stories you brought with you today.
You know, the one I just really wanted to focus on, which just caught my attention, and this kind of falls into the vein. Well, it does fall into the vein of my belief that as responsible citizens and as Christians, we should be more aware of what's happening in the world, more beyond what, you know, may be directly related to social issues or social policies. Foreign policy matters. Our government spends trillions of dollars over any given number of years, you know, on diplomacy, military. We spend well over $1 trillion on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So it really does matter. And in November, late November, the 24th, China did something that was pretty provocative. They stated a territorial claim to islands that have been administered by the Japanese since post-World War II and instituted a no-fly zone. Basically saying is there's no-fly zone here. You have to identify yourself. It's no longer international airspace. And if you fly over here, there's a chance that we could shoot you down.
It probably occurred to them that a president like Obama was not one to worry about.
He's kind of
known as a weakling, spineless president as far as foreign policy goes.
Let's give Obama his due. He actually did send a flight of 2 B-52s over the islands shortly after that.
But the Chinese were led to believe that they could get away with that due to previous things.
I do believe that there is a danger when somebody is perceived to be weak. And it's not just Obama, but Obama is a big part of it. And then, of course, these islands are actually very close to Taiwan. The closest major geography they're close to is Taiwan. So China gaining control of these islands would put them that much closer and be able to put in an invasion fleet and military resources close to Taiwan. And that's a big issue. And that's been a big issue for the last 30, 40 years between the United States and China. So it's something that we do need to be concerned about.
Well, that's the least of our problems. Look at what's going on with Iran right now.
Yep. And so, but going back to that, the world is a dangerous place, and that China was willing to do this points to the fact that they have military hardliners that have gained control there. There's some social issues happening in China that are not good for stability, especially with the one-child policy and the fact that far more girl children are aborted than men children.
Well, it used to be against the law to even have more than one child. They finally said I think they say you're allowed to have two now, but they're still regulating how many.
There's some exceptions there. But the bottom line is right now China has far more men in it than it does women, and that that's starting to create some issues and problems there. So you start throwing that with a rapidly expanding military, and on a purchasing parity basis, there are some estimates that put China's spending in 2013 up to $500 billion.
Do you think they're thinking that it's to their advantage to destroy some human lives in their military just to bring down the amount of men? Do you think that's actually
crossing their mind? No, it's just the classic thing when you have unrest at home and there's problems at home. A good battle is always a good
just
thing to do.
Emotion,
that's historically speaking.
Yeah, psychologically and emotionally, that does
that's
something
That's always been
to
the
you.
History of, right. There's many cases throughout history where that has been the case.
Yeah, like with young Adolf Hitler. Maybe if his mother had bought him a sled when he was little, he wouldn't have felt he needed to go out and conquer the world.
So part of this points to is that despite our unprecedented successes in the Gulf Wars, they were amazing in many respects. The U.S. military is in far worse shape than I think people really, really understand. You know, going out and defeating a third world country with World War II technology, tactics, and an understanding of war and battle is a whole different ballgame than taking on a country like China.
Well, plus all the PC police that are in our military now. I mean, Afghanistan, when one of our soldiers would shoot somebody, they would practically need an attorney to explain why they did it.
Right. Well,
so their hands are being tied behind their back.
Yes, if we had prosecuted the war, World War II, like we've been prosecuting the war in the Middle East, we'd be doing the goose step right now.
Right.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, that what has allowed us to do that is that at the end of World War II, we were the true one superpower. Sure, the Soviet Union had a lot of military, but economically we stood alone in the world, and we were able to spend a huge amount of money on our military, and we could do it. An industrial base that was the envy of the world. Nobody was even within a tenth of us.
Well, and Hitler's generals told him that the moment he declared war on the United States, he lost the war. They saw that very clearly.
That was in Japan too, especially.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So since then, though, we've seen a degrading of America's power in the world in terms of, you know, economic power. I mean, we are now running $1.4 trillion deficits every year. Our trade deficit with China is in the area of $300 to $400 billion per year. So our industrial base has shrunk dramatically. So we're no longer the nation we were when we were spending these huge amounts of money. And at the same time, you hear conservatives talking about, well, we just need to spend more money on the military. But I'll talk a little bit about this, give you some bullet points on the state of our military.
Co-hosting the show with me today is Mike Friedenberg, talking about the news of the day, and particularly our military at the moment and the precarious situation it's finding itself in. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Co-hosting the show today is my good friend Mike Friedenberg.
Bob, once again, thank you for having me. And as I'd mentioned, I was going to talk about some really high-level trends we've seen in our military, especially in the last 30 to 40 years. And they're bearing fruit. And one thing I will say is that if you want real information about what's happening in the military, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to get the information from official Pentagon spokespeople or people that are active duty. Speaking up on these types of issues and subjects is basically death to your career. So if you want to get information about what's really happening, you usually get it from retired folks. Or actually, if you actually do visit some blogs, enlisted people will actually be telling you what's really happening.
Well, and your son is in ROTC right now. Are you getting any information from him?
No, not really. And he's not that level where he's getting some of the stuff that's happened here. But I will mention, some trends here that I just think that people that are in, that haven't really been paying attention may not be aware. But first of all, as opposed to being a force that's designed to fight and win battles and strike fear into the heart of the enemies, the military increasingly has become an organization where social engineering and those types of politically correct goals are more important than actually military capability.
The doing away of the don't ask, don't tell?
Well, that would be one of the thing. Women into the combat, and a little bit different thing. Green ships, for example, spending hundreds of millions of dollars to put fuel into ships that's biofuel. By the way, the company providing this fuel will be a company that is a big supporter of Obama and he's friends with. And, the goal of a ship should be to be able to deliver the maximum amount of lethality to the enemy over the lifespan, not to be green. If it puts out 10% more pollution over its lifespan, it doesn't really matter. The U.S. Navy fleet, as big as it is a teeny, teeny percent of the ship-going fleet in the world. It's less than one half of 1% of the entire world's fleet. So those are the things. That's a ridiculous focus.
Have you been following this person that left Obama's staff and wrote that book where he said that he and Hillary were admitting that there were political decisions behind their views on the war?
Gates. Yes, I've been following that, just started to follow that, and that may yield some very interesting things there. But, the military from the time, of the 70s has been targeted by the feminists who have viewed the military culture and heritage as nothing more than, existing to create a men's club, and they've been savagely attacking, and they have substantially destroyed the warrior culture in the military. And a person like a MacArthur or a Patton most likely would not be able to advance in the military today. They just couldn't make it through the military.
Well, even in Patton's day, they kind of got rid of him pretty quickly when the war was over.
It's John Lehman, the former Secretary of the Navy and an aviation, naval aviator, has talked about this issue there. And basically, the people that advance in the military now are the ones that could toe the politically correct line. So, and with the changing of the don't ask, don't tell policy, and the women in combat thing there, is you have a lot of politically correct rules and regulations you have to follow in the military. And if you violate those, you do not advance at all. So they take those principles and they inculcate them in the young men that come into basic training. So for example, basic training now is a kinder, gentler, more sensitive process. The retention rate of people getting through basic training has gone up tremendously since the 70s.
Even in the Marine Corps?
They said that they would not do that, but once they got rid of the combat exclusion, they immediately lowered the standards for officers in the Marine Corps and for the Marine Corps Special Forces. And they're actually talking about lowering the standards for the Navy SEALs right now because the standards make it impossible for a woman to participate in those units.
Well, that just reeks of being so incredibly dangerous.
Well, yes, but they've done that for the entire force. And what it is, it creates a camouflage. They can point by lowering. They've lowered the standards in all the academies. They eliminated entire programs from the academies when they integrated them, and they lowered the standards so that they're much, much easier to get through now for everybody, including the men. So let me ask you a question, Bob. If you happen to be somebody going through basic training, and you're eventually going to be out in the field with a squad of 10 people. Do you want the person that went through the brutal basic training, the one that was able to stand the emotional stress of a sergeant screaming at him and all the things that were done throughout the years to weed out people that may not be able to stand up in combat? Or would you want one where the sergeant sits down there and says, well, Bob, how are you feeling? And that's really what we have gotten to. The basic training today has been so feminized that it is the people coming out of there do not, not you, it's a general statement, but you have no guarantee of the mental toughness coming out of there like you might have had from the old base training. The old base training was more effective. So that's just another thing there. So now if you're fighting a third world country like Iran or Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, Iraq in particular, or Afghanistan, and you have such a tremendous advantage in material, and frankly, we have still have great training. We still have great leaders. There's still many, many great people in the military.
We won't allow them to shoot at somebody if they're inside a mosque.
Yeah,
we come up with those
kinds of rules. But my point is that we when those wars that we fought, we could still do that, even though we, you know, we had women probably in places they should have been, because it was such a relatively weak opponent. But some of the things that have been done to the military, if facing a near peer competitor, which is what China be classified as, or Russia be classified as, those things would come out. You know, when you have a squad of 10 people, and now the military's going to say we'd have three of those being women, well, you have squad equipment. Well, now the women, it's a fact, they actually have studies, women cannot carry as much weight. So now that squad equipment has to be distributed among seven men instead of the, you know, and they okay. have to carry more weight. They can't travel as far. So all these things add up.
I want you to elaborate on that, because I know that you have been a strong believer that women shouldn't be in the military. And you just gave an example. Now, we probably have a lot of women listening, and I'm sure some of them are able to think of some jobs that a woman could do in the military very well. Mm-hmm. Are you against a woman serving in the military at all, or would you just say in combat?
Well, in areas where that are likely to become combat areas, I do not think women should serve there.
And that would be for, well, you gave a couple of examples. They can't carry things as heavy. Okay. What would be some other examples?
I mean, okay, that a number of years back, the Navy did a test of the types of activities necessary to save a Navy ship that's been hit. A ship that's desperately fighting for its life. You know, the fires are burning. There's holes. You're trying to plug holes literally with mattresses, things of that nature. That's what happens. That's what happened with the Stark. That's what happened with the Cole. These are ships that are hit. They did some tests there. There was a two thing. First of all, they did the test before they did extensive physical fitness training. And then they did test after extensive physical fitness training between men and women. And they found on these 10 key tests that the physical fitness training still ended up with near 100% failure rate for most of the major tests. Things like being able to grab a person and carry them to safety. The women couldn't do it. Things like carrying a firefighting equipment of a certain weight, they couldn't
really
do it.
It's not really an insult to women to say that physically women are just not as strong as men. I know there's exceptions. If a woman works out and a guy doesn't work out, there might be an but as a general rule, a healthy woman that stays in shape is not as strong as
there's
a healthy
a dramatic
woman.
Difference.
And there's
it's a dramatic.
That means nothing demeaning to women. It's just a physical fact. Okay, I'm here with Mike Friedenberg. We'll be back for one more segment. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ. I'm here with Mike Friedenberg, and we are talking about some of the hazards that are incorporated into our military today. It's not quite the military that it used to be.
No, indeed it's not. The women in combat issue is there's a lot of, that could be a discussion that could be many, many hours. However, I will just say this. No studies of any sort supported the idea of integrating women in combat. All the studies came back against it. So it was a decision made politically out of politically correct type motives. And it's going to end up being a disaster. It has resulted in a massive breakdown in military discipline, sexual assaults, false claims of rape, thousands of them. And they did a study on the U.S. Air Force, a number of years back, where 25% of the women that had claimed sexual assault immediately recanted when threatened with a truth test.
Well, and then there's the real sexual assault. Well, I know that in our first Persian Gulf War, a lot of women soldiers that were captured were just being raped.
That was a very small number. That would be a teeny, teeny, teeny number, just a few. The main thing is that there's an issue when you stick men and women in close quarters for long extended period of times in terms of stress. You have a breakdown in discipline. It's just a given. Now, the liberal mindset says, well, that should be able to work. They have a utopian worldview, and this should work. Well, it doesn't work. And so you have a massive breakdown of discipline, and to the degree where you had the Love Boat, a carrier pulling into town with dozens of pregnancies. Well, now the military was so embarrassed about that they literally have carriers flying women off the decks of carriers to get abortion.
Wow!
So they don't have to pull in port, and they can say, "Well, there's not a pregnant woman that I'm aware of on board." So that's But here's something. Okay, in the height of the Reagan buildup, In the 1980s, 1987, we reached the point where we nearly had a 600-ship Navy, 14-carry task force, three battleships, over double the number of ships we had now. We had over double the number of people in the Navy. We had over double the number of the fighters that we have now. And today, we are spending almost as much in inflation-adjusted dollars as we were spending then. So something's happened. We're getting a whole lot less bang for our buck. And part of it is personnel costs. And it goes beyond the fact that, women do cost more to maintain than an average guy in the military by quite a bit. They have double the non-deployment rate. Of course, obviously, when they're pregnant, you lose productivity there. There's a whole bunch of reasons there. And healthcare costs are much higher for women.
And a woman
is
actually allowed to be in the military while she's pregnant?
That was eliminated many years ago. In fact, the military now—
Even in combat?
In a complete act of political—well, no, they go on restricted duty.
Oh, okay.
But that restricted duty person no longer is nearly as capable as they were when they weren't pregnant, right? So we have
nightmare.
All these things are going on here, and then so we're getting less bang for a buck from, the defense contractors supply equipment, far less. Hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars are being wasted there and siphoned off, and it's a process where you have lots and lots of good people that participated, but because the system is a bad system, it produces bad results. So, when you have admirals and generals, 300 of them that are currently working for defense contractors, and these people shortly before were working in the military monitoring these same defense programs, as even really good people can rationalize as to why a program that really maybe is not that great is better than it is. And we have a system of incentives that rewards people for not holding the defense industry accountable and severely docking for those who stand up against corruption or a bad program. So we have a much smaller military. The ships are falling apart. So in the Reagan years, the ships were kept in top maintenance. Well, in 2013, Admiral Greenert made a decision to cancel $600 of critical maintenance on ships in order to put more of that money to buy new ships from the defense industry. Because, the defense industry doesn't get that maintenance money. They get the money. So he took that maintenance money.
So it became more about profit than about having an effective military.
But that's not the way they say it. They think, we need this new equipment. There's always a rationalization you can come up with.
And right. But despite the rationalization, it really is about profit.
So a lot of these people making the decision are honorable people who put their lives on the line for the country, who serve the country honorably, but their system that they're in rewards bad behavior. And these people are very smart people, very, very smart people. And one of the things is the smarter you are, the better you can rationalize things.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's
the human mind has an incredible ability to rationalize.
So we have the example of the littoral combat ship. So going back to China, our ability to participate and fight in the littoral waters is really, really very bad right now. Most of the ships we have are designed for the open oceans, blue water ships. they're very vulnerable when they get close to sea. For example, Arleigh Burke. An Arleigh Burke destroyer, which is the backbone of our surface combat fleet, that's a $2 billion ship. It's supposed to be our anti-submarine warfare ship. It's supposed to be our anti-ballistic missile ship. It's supposed to provide our land strike ability. Well, the naval senior leadership is definitely afraid to send it into littoral waters because a $250 million ship, a teeny fraction of the cost of it, a submarine, could destroy it, easily destroy it. They're not going to do that. So right now we've been building ships that don't really fit the mission very well. And we've been building ships that, you know, we got rid of after modernizing the battleships, which actually did a wonderful job for what they're supposed to do, we canceled them so we could build something called the DDX-1000 destroyer. Well, 22 years later and $22 billion later, we ended up with a ship that the admirals are calling a technology demonstration platform. It's vulnerable. It can't go into littoral waters to do what it's supposed to do. It in no way, shape, or form comes close to replacing a battleship. And it's a technology demonstration platform. So we have all these examples of massive amounts of money being wasted and not being spent productively. At the same time, China is able to take technology from us that took us billions and billions of dollars to develop. And for millions of dollars, they're able to steal it and incorporate it into their designs. So they are coming out with fighters that may not be as advanced as the F-22 Raptor, but maybe they're 80% as advanced, but they're able to bring it out for 20% of the cost. So all of these things here means that, you know, despite the massive amount of money we're spending, we're getting very little bang for our buck, and China is able to reap the benefits of our spending because, you know, for example, the F-22 Raptor, a lot of the money was spent on designing the design of the ship, how it looks, the geometry of the actual plane. Well, once that plane became public, China was able to take that geometry, measure it down to millimeters, and you now see that being incorporated into some of their stealth jets. So the hundreds of millions of dollars we spent on that, China's got for a pittance.
So even if we didn't have a president who doesn't seem to understand when to use diplomacy and when to use might, even if we had a president that was more of a hawk, you're saying we're just not equipped anymore
to fight some of these battles. We're still the most powerful military in the world. We still have the best overall training in the world. We still have...
But you're seeing the handwriting on the wall.
But there is a downward trend that... the conservatives, the people that understand just how dangerous the world is, they're generally silent about these things because they've been trained that their job is to defend the military no matter what. When the left attacks the military, you as a conservative defend. When the liberals attack the military, you as a conservative defend. And so the answer from the conservatives is just, well, we need to spend more money. Well, if you spend money right now in the current system, you'll be wasting most of it because it's not going to produce good results. So we need to have conservatives willing to step forward and level constructive criticism aimed to really improve the military.
Now, have people like John McCain done that, or do they play ball with the...
There's very few people that do this.
At least as far as military matters.
There is a dearth of good, solid criticism from people who really care about the military and want to see it as powerful as possible on the conservative side. It's like the people who have been trained... When you say something about the military negative, they've been trained to react very, very strongly without even thinking about it. It's really there. Now, John Lehman, the former Secretary of the Navy, who I have a lot of respect for, a very sharp guy, is one of the few really articulate voices out there that is talking about this. And he just flat out said, if you put money into the system, you're going to be wasting it. There needs to be major reforms. And the bureaucracy there has now grown, too. We now have 750,000 full-time bureaucrats, whereas we had 50 billets at the start of World War II, 50 of those.
Well, Mike, thank you for bringing this to our attention, and it was nice to have you join me for our first brand-new show of our 10th season. I will see you next week, everybody, for another brand-spanking-new show. Have a good week. See you next Sunday.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.